guide you. You bring us beside you, light up the darkness and show us the way. For though we are strangers in your silent world, to live on the land we must learn from the sea. To be true as the tide, free as a windswell, joyful and loving in letting it be. Calypso, the places you've been to, the things that you've shown us, the stories you tell. Calypso, I sing to your spirit, the men who have served you so long and so well. Calypso, the places you've been to, the things that you've shown us, the stories you tell. Calypso, I sing to your spirit.
Yes, folks, that's old Johnny Denver again, back from the dead, with Calypso. The Calypso he's referring to is, of course, the name of the late Jacques Cousteau. Everybody's dying. John Denver, Jacques Cousteau, what does it all mean? Means that everything is ephemeral, I guess. Or prone to entropy. Okay, yeah. Calypso was Jacques Cousteau's science research vessel that continued to do researching all over the world, including the Mississippi River and what's underneath those waters. And old Johnny, he wanted to pay a tribute to the Calypso. Other than that, I forget the details of that story. What's even weirder is, what the heck am I doing singing, playing a John Denver song on Mideast Migraines, brought to you by Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM. We're also live on the internet. Our online radio service streaming at freakradio.org. Click on the red oval. Hunt for the red oval. Click on it, and you'll get the streaming data of our show. You'll just get the old radio show coming in on your little pewter there. This is the Mideast Migraine Show. Hi, my name is Wren, short for Lawrence. This is Mideast Migraines for the, let me see, 10th day of March 2014. It is 3:04 in the afternoon this Monday, March 10th. And if that jives with your own personal time-space continuum, you'll know that the show is live, indeed live, and you may call in at any time. Don't worry about interrupting anything that I'm doing or saying. Just go ahead, dial up, and rudely interrupt me. No, really, don't worry about that. I am actually in the process of canceling an email here because I'm trying to get you the latest info on this terrible thing that happened, I believe, 7 days ago today, or 7 to 10 days ago anyway, in Israel, at one of those notorious and infamous Israeli checkpoints in the occupied territories. Just getting the latest on it for ye, free. All right. I got caught a midstream here when the music stopped suddenly. The computer is really slow today, and that's just jamming the hell out of my brain. Oh boy. Okay. Well, let's just get on with the show, okay? Soothe my vocal cords here with a cool beverage. Oh, that feels better. Nothing like a little liquid candy, eh? people who've been listening to the show or who listen to the scuttlebutt that's going on around knows that old Mitty's Migraines is branching out slightly, and we are trying to touch on a few other things that I think are important. Like, for example, Bill Maher. Now, isn't Bill Maher awfully important, folks? For the uninitiated or those with very short memories, Bill Maher, that's B-I-L-L-M-A-H-E-R, pronounced Bill Maher, is a very funny man, a comedian who makes very serious comments, riddled with laughter, riddled with tongue-in-cheek about politics and current events. And he's got this show, of course, he was famous for some years, 10 or so years, on the old boob tube before he was forced off of the broadcast spectrum and onto cable when he was doing Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. He said something which inferred insult to our brave troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I won't get into that now. Anyway, instead, I'm going to just play this piece for you. This was the tail end, the 5-minute suffix to his last live show, which was a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, the current show Real Time with Bill Maher. The old show was Politically Incorrect. Now it's Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO, to be perfectly frank. New rule, income equality in America. This is, by the way, recording is, which is probably is or was on YouTube, is sponsored to us by way of Daily KOS, Daily KOS, entitled Bill Maher's Excellent Commentary on Income Equality. And it sounds like this.
And finally, new rule, someone must tell me, what is with this new trend of people who have all the power acting like they're the oppressed ones? Heterosexual Christians under siege from gays. White people complaining that reverse racists are trying to strip them of their right to shoot unarmed black men. And most bizarre, the recent wave of billionaires sobbing that they're being demonized and under attack. And the thing is, it's not just having all the money in the world that's getting them down. It's that the rest of us don't often enough look at them and say, you are the most brilliant, industrious person on earth. Can you teach us how to be more like you while we buff your cock with this fine chamois? You know, I used to think Hollywood egos were the neediest, but these masters of the universe, more like babies on a plane. Stock trader Steve Schwartzman, net worth $8 billion, once said that Obama raising his taxes 3% felt like when Hitler invaded Poland. Sounds like something Sarah Palin would tweet after huffing paint thinner. But with the super rich, it's becoming a meme. Now we have Tom Perkins, net worth $8 billion, saying the richest 1% are so persecuted in America, they feel like Jews in Nazi Germany. Which is why, just to be safe, last week Tom built a panic room inside his mansion that's a full-size replica of Anne Frank's house. Is it really that hard out there for a pimp with $8 billion? You know, even when your shady financial tricks tanked the economy, nothing happened to any of you. Nobody went to jail. Nobody went broke. Justin Bieber didn't even egg your house. You just got richer while everybody else got poorer. The Oxfam committee released a report this year on global inequality, and the 85 richest people, 85, own more than the bottom 3.5 billion put together, which is half the planet. This is a real problem, and not just for when they go hevesies on a wedding present. And not that that Nazi Jew analogy deserves to be taken seriously, but the Jews didn't do anything to deserve the hate they got. But America's super rich? In the last 30 years, even though worker productivity went up 90%, income only went up 8%. If I was working twice as hard and someone else was reaping almost all the reward, I'd hate them. And I'd also want to know, how could that happen? Well, billionaire Sam Zell knows the answer to that. He said the rest of America should stop bitching about the 1% and realize they are the 1% because they work harder. Okay, now we do need to come after you with pitchfork. Is talking on the phone in a comfortable office really more degrading than working in a slaughterhouse or a sweatshop or on a reality TV show? With just one real estate deal last year, Sam Zell made 1,000 times what this guy makes. Did he really work 1,000 times harder? By the way, that's a coal miner, not John Boehner. Did you know that during World War II, FDR actually proposed a cap on income that, in today's dollars, would mean that no person could ever take home more than about $300,000? Okay, that is a little low. But wouldn't it be great if there... Wouldn't it be great if there were Democrats out there like that now who would say to billionaires, oh, you're crying? We'll give you something to cry about. You don't want a minimum wage? How about we not only have a minimum wage, we have a maximum wage? That is not... That is not a new idea. James Madison, who wrote our Constitution, said, government should prevent an immoderate accumulation of riches. Washington, Jefferson, Hamilton, they all agreed that too much money in the hands of too few would destroy democracy. What can you buy with $2 billion that you can't buy with one? You couldn't spend that kind of cash if you lived forever and your money manager was MC Hammer. And you know, there are some billionaires today who get that. And that's why they give most of their money away.
Picture of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett on the screen here.
As Warren Buffett once said, I should write a book on how to get by on $500 million because apparently there's a lot of people who don't know how to do it. Okay, that's our show. We're off next week.
And again, that's Bill Maher doing the tail end of his last, most recent episode of Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO. I'm going to throw my two bits in here. I can remember reading in popular culture magazines, I think it was Life or Time, a while back, someone asked the question, well, what causes inflation? What's the real force behind inflation? And the answer is that these experts quoted in the article were talking in terms of credit, too much credit, or depending on who's asking for it, too little credit. It's Americans taking off on and going wild with their credit cards, and it's this and it's that. And I'll tell you the reason for inflation, plain and simple. It's generated from the wealthiest end of the spectrum. Inflation is caused by rich people, because they're the ones who set the rules. They set the baseline for what they consider to be a minimum profit that they determine for themselves that they should be able to make. When you, this just like what Mr. Maher here was saying about Thomas Jefferson's quote, when you have these radical differentiations between the richest and the poorest in society, it destroys democracy. Well, it also wrecks the economy for those among the 99% poorest. Because the rules are being made and enforced by the richest, they can have all kinds of speculations on the stock market, and speculations are nothing more than a signal for the favorite investors, the chosen investors, to determine their profit level and to try to ease up prices on oil when if a hurricane hits the Texas coast where they have all these refineries. That tends to drive up speculation on prices, and speculation is kind of a difficult thing to define. Gee, even I can't accurately define it, but I know it's a phenomenon which causes utterly artificial hikes in things that really have nothing to do with the actual price of digging up coal or drilling and refining oil and gasoline. It's pure market. And again, these rules were set by the richest people in society. Inflation, my friends, comes from the wealthiest sector of the American economy and the world economy. It's only my opinion. If you want to talk about that or dispute what I just said, here's the phone number to Free Radio Santa Cruz Studio, live and in person. I'm here. You will not be screened. You will go right on the air. The number is area code 831-427-3772. Now that I've given you a chance to go wildly running it through the kitchen into the den to grab your pencil and parchment. Okay, are you set back down now? Come on. I'll give you a couple more seconds here. Gee, it sure felt good to read that piece and to have it read itself, announce itself. Okay, again, the phone number for the studio is area 831-427-3772. 831-427-3772. This is the Mideast Migraine Show, brought to you every Monday at 3 in the afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. We're now on PDT here on the west coast of North America. And Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcasts at 101.3 FM. Stream live at freakradio.org. Click on the red oval. As long as you got your writing implements in hand there and your parchment in front of you, copy this down to MideastMadness@gmx.com. This is the email address for this program on Free Radio. Mideast Madness. At G as in George, M as in Machiavellia, X as in xylophone.com. Mideast Madness, per se, is the former name of the program. Not the first name, but the former name. I decided I wanted to bring a little more attention to what we're doing here by adding some levity and also being a little more truthful about what the effort of bringing this program does to you a little bit. We're now Mideast Migraines. Migraines is spelled MIGRAINES. That's how I spell the word anyway. But the email address for this program contains the old name of the show, Mideast Madness, MADNESS. At gmx.com. You may leave me your non-real-time one-way message that way, and you most likely will get a response. Unless you ask me not to, then maybe I won't respond. And I may as well throw in the fact that this being March 10th, I think Radio for All is still in business. recorded programs, recorded episodes of the Mideast Migraines and old Mideast Madness shows can be found in the archives, located at this, at another website, namely radioforall.net. That's RADIO, the numerical character for all.net, radioforall.net. To get recordings of previous shows, previous episodes of this program. All right. Okay, folks. This awful thing that happened at the Israeli checkpoint. I'm looking for the original article. Happened about a week ago. You see, I'm embarrassed because well, considering it happened about a week ago, I have to go by date. And I hope you can forgive me. It's a drag, I know. What happened was, you see, Palestine, technically, according to the major world body or bodies, rules and regulations, is not currently recognized as a state. There is no state of Palestine in the most official sense on the world stage, even though the Palestinian Authority, which has very limited autonomous authority over its own people in the occupied territories, Israeli militarily occupied territories, now calls itself the state of Palestine. That ever since about a year and a half ago, when the United Nations accepted the PA, hence the state of Palestine, as far as the PA is concerned, into UNESCO, an educational and cultural division of the United Nations, as an observing non-member state. This got Israel all up in arms, and they reacted with economic violence against the Palestinians by promising to build 10 or 20,000 more settlement units in the Palestinians' territory. At any rate, the bottom line here is that at a checkpoint about a week ago, Palestine, with whatever status it has, is a member of FIFA, or the International Football or Soccer Organization. And I'm sounding funny here because I'm still embarrassingly looking for this for the precise article. This is really awful because I know I copied it down. There is a Palestine Soccer League as a member of FIFA, the International Soccer Group, which is scheduled to play. No, you don't want that. In FIFA's global schedule of competing teams representing various member countries around the world. And, okay, I'll just get to the one. Let me do the one. And I found it, lo and behold. Here are the details as when they came out immediately after the incident. This article is dated March 5th, which would have been last Wednesday, from The Nation. And here is what happened. Titled, "After the Latest Incident, Israel's Future in FIFA, the FIFA, is Uncertain." This is written by Dave Zirin for The Nation, Magazine, Internet Edition, March 3rd. Glorious looking picture here in full color, although it is a little dark, of the Palestine soccer team racing hand in hand and raised hands across the field with the Palestine flag unfurled. Caption, the Palestinian national soccer team, a source of pride for many, has been under attack by the Israeli state. Their names were Johar Nasser Johar, 19 years old, and Adam Abin Al-Rouf Halabiya, 17. They were once soccer players in the West Bank. Now they're never going to play sports again. Johar and Adam were on their way home from a training session in the Faisal Al-Husseini Stadium on January 31st when Israeli forces fired upon them as they approached a checkpoint. After being shot repeatedly, they were mauled by checkpoint dogs and then beaten. 10 bullets were put into Johar's feet. Adam took one bullet in each foot. After being transferred from a hospital in Ramallah, the de facto capital, de facto present-day capital of Palestine in the West Bank, after being transferred from a hospital in Ramallah to King Hussein Medical Center in Amman, the capital of the state of Jordan, the nation of Jordan, they received the news that soccer would no longer be a part of their futures. And in parentheses, it says, Israel's Border Patrol maintains that the two young men were about to throw a bomb. Okay, of course. Continuing. This is only the latest instance of targeting Palestinian soccer players by the Israeli army and security forces. Death, injury, or imprisonment has been a reality for several members of the Palestinian national team over the last 5 years. Just imagine if members of Spain's top flight World Cup team had been jailed, shot, or killed by another country, and imagine the international media outrage that would ensue. Imagine if prospective youth players for Brazil were shot in the feet by the military of another nation. But tragically, these events along the checkpoints have received little attention on the sports page or beyond. A reminder, I am reading from The Nation, the nation's internet news service. Article by Dave Zirin, March 3. Just wiping my glasses here. Continuing with the article, much has been written about the psychological effect this kind of targeting has on the occupied territories. Sports represent escape, joy, and community. And the Palestinian national soccer team, for a people without a recognized nation, is a source of tremendous pride. To attack the players is to attack the hope that the national team will ever truly have a home. The Palestinian national football team, which formed in 1998, is currently ranked 144th in the world by the Federación Internacional de Fútbol Asociación, or FIFA, or FIFA. That's where you come up with if you try to translate that into immediate English, you'll have a hard time figuring out why the letters are in the order that they're in the acronym here. It's Federación Internacional de Football Association, the International Federation of Football Association, FIFA. Continuing. Ranked 144th, they have never been higher than 115th. As chairman of the Palestinian Football Association, Jibril Al-Rajoub commented bluntly, the problems are rooted in, and I quote, the occupation's insistence on destroying Palestinian sport. End quote. Over the last year, in response to the systematic targeting of Palestinian soccer, Al-Rajoub has attempted to assemble forces to give Israel the ultimate sanction and, as he said, demand the expulsion of Israel from FIFA and the International Olympic Committee. Al-Rajoub claims the support of Jordan, Qatar, Iran, Oman, Algiers, which is the capital of Algeria, and Tunisia in favor of this move, and promises more countries, with an opportunity at a regional March 14 meeting of Arab states to organize more support. He has also pledged to make the resolution formal when all the member nations of FIFA meet in Brazil. Qatar's place in this, Qatar, the second or third smallest Arab nation in the Arabian Gulf, Qatar's place in this as host of the 2022 World Cup for soccer deserves particular scrutiny. As the first Arab state to host the tournament, they are under fire for the hundreds of construction deaths of Nepalese workers occurring on their watch. As the volume on these concerns rises, Qatar needs all the support in FIFA that they can assemble. Whether they eventually see the path to that support is one that involves confronting or accommodating Israel will be fascinating to see. Okay. Hang in there with me, folks. We're still working on something here. Okay. See, there are a number of you out there who are still listening and still with me. Thank you. Continuing with the article. As for Sepp Blatter, he clearly recognizes that there is a problem in the treatment of Palestinian athletes by the Israeli state. Over the last year, he has sought to mediate this issue by convening a committee of Israeli and Palestinian authorities to see if they can come to some kind of agreement about easing the checkpoints and restrictions that keep Palestinian athletes from leaving and trainers, consultants, and coaches from entering the West Bank and Gaza. Yet, Al-Rajoub sees no progress. As he said, "This is the way the Israelis are behaving, and I see no sign that they have recharged their mental batteries. There is no change on the ground. We are a full FIFA member and have the same rights as all other members." End quote. The shooting into the feet of Jahir and Adam has taken a delicate situation and made it an impossible one. Sporting institutions like FIFA and the IOC, that would be the International Olympic Committee, are always wary about drawing lines in the sand when it comes to the conduct of member nations. But the deliberate targeting of players is seen, even in the corridors of power, as impossible to ignore. As long as Israel subjects Palestinian athletes to detention and violence, their seat at the table of international sports will never be short of precarious. Again, this article goes back to March 3rd. Comments for the thread are now closed, but I'm going to read you the first one, some of the first ones that came over. If I had to cut and paste and read every last comment, it would get real tedious, as there was a surprising number, as is often the case, on the comment sections of internet articles, a number of one or few, very few words, like one or two word statements and responses, which doesn't really, in my mind, deserve attention, even though they may have the right to post their opinions. Okay, Wisconsin Reader 70. Comment on the article. "Religion-based violence. Keep the masses divided over petty cultural differences so they do not unite around economic justice and government working for everyone." Mademoiselle B. "I'm not even going to bother reading or responding to the usual annoying and ridiculous hasbara from the legion of Ziobots, and frankly, neither should any sane person. It is a waste of time. Let them say whatever they want. No one buys their nonsense anyway. FIFA should kick Israel out. Enough already. Enough of the rest of the world putting up with the insanity. Enough. It's as simple as that. Or at least as it should be. I mean, how much more disgusting can they behave before the rest of the world finally says and shows what they mean? And shows that they mean it. It's long overdue. Kindly excuse me for half a minute, folks. Have to tend to something.
Does the heart know the way? And if not, can it ever be found? In a smile or a tear or a prayer or a sigh or a song? And if so, then I sing for my father. And in truth, you must know I would rather he were here by my side. We could fly on the wings of a dream.
Please forgive me. These internal matters do come up every once in a while. Back to the comments. Comments on the article. 2 hours after that last one, assailing the Ziobots and Hasbaristas, came this one remark. And I'm not going to give even the internet handles on these guys, because they're playing with us here. They're switching names and altering the order of them and just mixing me up. So this next person, 2 hours after that last one, says, "Nope, Israeli Hasbara teams have been given the rat signal and successfully deployed to distract, slander, and lie as usual." And an hour after that, someone chimed in, "Egypt has just banned Hamas. A Cairo court has banned the Palestinian Hamas movement from operating in Egypt and has seized all their assets, accusing the Gaza Strip's rulers of colluding in terrorist attacks on its territory and aiding the outlawed Muslim Brotherhood." There you have it. Even the Egyptians have come to realize that Hamas is a terror organization that spreads death and destruction, not just on Israeli innocent victims, but of Egyptian citizens too. Slap one of those useless BDS, or boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement of yours on them. Supposedly a comment to the article, which has nothing to do with Hamas per se. Just an excuse for someone to bring us the news that Cairo has banned Hamas, or the, which is the, Hamas is the Palestinian version of Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood. And by the way, BDS is hardly useless. I've already read several articles to people about how many Israelis are feeling the effect of BDS and pressures being brought upon Israel and the government of the state of Israel to stop oppressing their Palestinian natives under the pressure of boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Next, hopefully pertinent comment. "Nice try, Hasbara Shul, always trying to distract from the topic at hand. Why do Israeli Jews keep shooting innocent people?" After that, they don't. Then what about, remember folks, I'm eliminating some of the rather short, pointless ones here. "They don't. Then what about Jahir Nasser Jahir and Adam Abin al-Rauf Halabiya? To give everyone their full names, what crime are they guilty of other than being better at soccer than Jews?" According to this writer, that particular writer. Next item. "They were guilty of throwing firebombs and rioting, trying to kill Israeli security personnel. They got off very lightly considering their serious crimes." Let me chime in here. You know, first of all, whether it's true or not, particularly if it's not true, of course, in their own defense, the Israeli security checkpoint army policeman guys, of course, they're going to say something that no one at least immediately can disprove that they were about to throw a bomb or that they thought. They can say whether or not these two Palestinian soccer players actually had bombs on their persons or not. The security guys could just say, we thought they were going to throw a bomb at us. They have to say something, do something in their defense, as though they need any defense, because probably very little is going to happen about this. Might get a slap on the wrist or a couple of days in the stockade. That's par for the course for the Israeli so-called defense forces. But this person is just going wild with the accusations. They were guilty of throwing, not about to throw, or looked like they were going to throw, but guilty of throwing firebombs and rioting. Yeah, two soccer players rioting. Trying to kill Israeli security personnel who were guards in illegally occupied territory, I might add. They got off very lightly considering their serious crimes. Ooh, ooh, how so serious. Next person chimes in. I'll give you these guys' names. David Hertz and Anna Brown. Good Lord, the pictures are good enough to show great violence without having to look for bullet holes in the feet. And how do we know who he is? I work for the PIPA Press Photo Agency. Identifying pictures needs a tightly controlled information chain. What these guys, what this man and woman are referring to is one of the ones that I deleted for whatever appropriate reason. That someone is looking at pictures that were provided by the Israelis, supposedly showing these two Palestinians under detainment after the shooting incident and supposedly showing that there were no wounds to the feet whatsoever. So I'll read it again. I'll read this follow-up to that remark again. Good Lord, the pictures are good enough to show great violence without having to look for bullet holes in the feet. And how do we know who he is? I work for the SIPA Press Photo Agency. Identifying pictures needs a tightly controlled information chain. Rahil Yusuf Sadi chimes in. People need to start realizing that the only path to peace is for the total dismantlement of the freak state of Israel. Just not me talking. I'm just the messenger here. This Frankenstein creation is responsible for destabilizing the Middle East and veering the U.S. into unjust wars through its lobbies. Deport these psychopathic degenerates back to Europe and Russia where they belong. Very, very stiff wording from a man with most definitely an Arabic name, Rahil Yosaf Sadi. There is a picture associated with that comment, supposedly of Mr. Sadi in a three-piece vest and white shirt and tie, looking very 70s-ish, actually, in front of a very gloriously unfurled American flag. I'll read it to you again and comment. People need to start realizing that the only path to peace is the total dismantlement of the freak state of Israel. This Frankenstein creation is responsible for destabilizing the Middle East and veering the U.S. into unjust wars through its lobbies. Deport these psychopathic degenerates back to Europe and Russia where they belong. I very often find myself, this is Ren speaking now, I often find myself referring to the only path to peace, or the realistic path, let's say, to peace and justice. He calls for total dismantlement of the freak state of Israel. I can understand someone referring to Israel as a freak state, as it is, in essence, just another foreign occupying power, which managed to sneak its way into world opinion and on the world stage to the point of becoming an internationally officially recognized state, while they deny statehood, sovereignty, and decency for the native Arabs who lived there before them. He calls for the total dismantlement of the state, and specifically deporting these guys, as he puts it, back to Europe and Russia where they belong. I, for one, do not advocate, and certainly never expect any mass deportations of Israeli Jews to places that most of them have never even been to by this point in time, almost 66 years now of the modern state of Israel. That'll just create more similar problems, similar to the ones they caused when they forced into existence a new diaspora of Palestinian refugees around the world and in the Middle East, and the creation of many, many dozens and scores of refugee camps in the West Bank, Gaza, and in adjacent Arab countries. He is more than a tad relentless in his advocacy of reversing the Zionist project. He refers to Israel as a Frankenstein creation responsible for destabilizing the Middle East. I think we can all agree there's a lot of truth to that. And veering the U.S. into unjust wars through its lobbies, namely Afghanistan, Iraq, interventions in Lebanon, getting 250 of our Marines killed at the Marine barracks in Beirut. Oh, yeah, perhaps it was Arabs, Lebanese, or even Palestinians who committed those deaths. But the only reason why the United States was there was part of a peace contingent, peacemaking UN coalitionized contingent, to get Israel to back off a bit from its invasion, its 1982 invasion of Lebanon. And this and that. So that's where this guy is coming from. Very bitter man refers to these Israelis as psychopathic degenerates. That is hardly a necessary thing to say. And John Eliopoulos says in response to Mr. Sadi's comment, "And you back to the Rubal Kali." Rubal Kali referring to the empty quarter or the very, very barren desert of the southern part of Saudi Arabia. In fact, it can be said to be the majority of non-coastal Saudi Arabia. Raheel shoots back at him, "I'm not from the Rubal Kali, you idiot." You might as well be. This is what happens when uneducated desert dwellers go on the internet. Okay, now listen up, folks. I'll read that again. This the guy, Endurance, is saying to Raheel Yusuf Sadi, "You might as well be from the Rubal Kali. This is what happens when uneducated desert dwellers go on the internet." Okay. Another person, Ava, we'll call her, responds almost immediately to that one. She says, Ava says, "I'm sorry you're calling her a desert dweller. Well, clearly you forgot your Jewish roots. Abraham came from Iraq and lives a Bedouin life in the Holy Land, and so did Esau and Yitzhak and Jacob and Moses. His own Ten Commandments were in a desert. And so were the tribes of Israel." It's very difficult reading this person. Her spelling is atrocious. "And so were the tribes of Israel, and you have the chutzpah to tell her she's a desert dweller." She seems to think that this guy, Raheel, is a her. "I'm sorry, bubbly. I'm sorry, buddy. But this Israeli mentality and this Jewish mentality that looking down on others, even though these people are better than you and your own parents," obviously she's writing this from her cell phone here, or her handheld mobile device, at least you'd think so by the way she spells things. "Even though these people are better than you and your own parents is what lead you to the ovens and for the world to hate you for thousands of years. The Germans cooked you. The Italians out you in ghettos in the 16th century, and the Spaniards and Portuguese burned you alive and converted you, and you have the chutzpah to attack Palestinians. First get your revenge on Europe after they treated you like shit for thousands of years, and they called you Bedouins and found you all disgusting, then come and talk about Arabs. At least they didn't kill 6 million on top of On top of that, you're still slaves to the German. No Jew has the chutzpah to deny a German or Polish person the entry to Israel when just 70 years ago, this grandparent or even parent of the Germans has fucked up. And you sent Palestinians basic rights, and you still buy German products and German shit. Pathetic losers. You think you can look down on Palestinians when the entire world looked down on you. Ha ha ha. Get over yourself and put that huge cheap nose down. People just go crazy with their opinions. I mean, here is an enormously long paragraph from someone full of bitterness and loathing. On the one hand, perhaps rightfully pointing out the hypocrisy of a Jewish person or an Israeli who advocates expelling Palestinians even more to the Saudi Arabian desert and making racist comments like uneducated desert dwellers going on the internet. These are both assholes, in my opinion, at least the way the lengths that they go to in expressing themselves. I'm trying to intelligently point out things that I think are true about this second person's paragraph, but there's such a mixture of hatred and even racism in with the facts that I'll just read it to you and let you judge for yourself. Saadi himself comes in and says, "What's that? Oh, it's the sound of a desperate Israeli apologist making lame personal attacks in order to distract from Israel's crimes and general illegitimacy." Another one says, "Give it a rest. That kind of rubbish is well past its use-by date. Wake up and smell the roses. Next time, take your meds before you post, stupid bugger." Another guy says, "Talk about rubbish. What are you even saying? You reap what you sow, and Israel and its supporters have been sowing evil and hate for decades. Don't blame Americans for being sick of Israeli aggression, considering we give them $13 billion a year." That's actually $3 billion a year, according to the congressional record. But that's just American taxpayer money. There's a lot of other money they get from U.S. sources. Continuing with response, "We have every right to hold them accountable. The disdain of Israel is certainly understandable and is confounding. And what is confounding is who would support such a rogue state, mainly right-wing nuts who think a Jewish state will bring the end of the world. I guess that is not such an odd coupling. Not odd at all." At least this person has their heads slightly better together than the previous wild rants that I just read. And someone corrects the last one. $3 billion, not 13. Where do you get these figures from? Do you pull these numbers out of Abbas's butt, referring to the president of the PA, Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen. Murph 622. That's kind of rough language, don't you think? Extreme to the other side. Moderation and obeying international norms would be better. There is some self-regulation just in the course of people reading and choosing to contribute to these comment sections. Saadi again. "No, I don't think so. You're dealing with an illegal state that doesn't give two hoots about international law and is currently engaged in the slow extermination of a native population. They should not be tolerated in any way." Bibliophiline responds to him. "What they are doing shouldn't be tolerated. The people ought to be." Okay, what they are doing shouldn't be tolerated, but the people ought to be. People who are doing the doing. "Why not a one-state solution where the rights of everyone is guaranteed and a strong United Nations presence is there for the next generation or two?" And just about done here with those comments that I chose to transplant from the article. Murph 262, Bob Kahn, one of the two. That's strange how they put these together. Shooting the feet of soccer players or the thousands of documented cases of shooting a Palestinian youth is defending itself? I remember being in Israel during the first and second Intifada. There was a general sense of hopelessness that nothing was getting better. The Israeli Defense Forces became more and more brutal, even breaking the arms of teenagers with stones as caught on TV several times. Remember that? Nothing has changed. The bulldozings of Palestinian homes continued. Land grabbed. Olive groves plowed under. So, defending against what? Palestinian aspirations for dignity and the state of their own? Apparent response to that follows here. Seriously, do you really believe any of that BS? We keep going in a loop here. The Palestinians don't want a state. If they do get a state, the world will at last be rid of them. I don't understand that. The sympathy and the billions of dollars in aid will all dry up. They won't be able to blame Israel for all their failures anymore, and you anti-Israel posters will have to find something else to do with your empty and boring lives. Incredible how people come up with some of these convoluted hypothetical scenarios, treating them almost as if it is actually what's going on now, and use them as justifications for not oppressing Palestinians, or use them as justifications for continuing to oppress Palestinians. Going in a loop here. Sure are going in a loop, but then you have to throw in this stuff that really doesn't have anything to do with the article about two PAL soccer players getting their feet shot out from underneath them. Very last comment here, and then we'll get back to real reality. Israelis are literally paid millions of dollars by their government to post pro-Israel propaganda on the internet. I can only assume you're one of their employees. I'm going to be doing a lot more careful research on this accusation that the Israelis pay the government or some other Israeli or Jewish entities pay thousands or tens of thousands or millions of dollars to their own people to post pro-Israel propaganda on the internet. I'm going to be taking a closer look at that, and I'll have more for you on next Monday's episode of Mideast Migraines. Don't go away. I'm almost made it sound as though it's the end of the show. We go for an hour and 55 minutes. 5 minutes short of 2 hours only because I run up into the IMEMC's Palestine Today news headline show just before the top of the hour. But Mideast Migraines is scheduled to go as almost a two-hour show every Monday, starting at 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And, of course, there is the weekend edition, the Saturday edition of Mideast Migraines, which is also my program. I do two completely separate shows, except perhaps for a little bit of crossover of important information between shows. The Saturday edition starts at 11 a.m. Pacific time. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Saturday. That show is currently dedicated in its entirety to the reading until I'm through with the book of Max Blumenthal's Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel, just published last October, last year. I'll be starting, I believe, with chapter 49. We're just about smack in the middle of Goliath. So tune in on Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. That's Pacific Daylight Time, of course, now. To join in the fun of my reading to you, just like you would sit down, lie down in bed with a real good book like we all do, right? like so many of us used to love to do, or if not a parchment, cardboard-bound book, then a Kindle or other mobile device, or perhaps you enjoy listening to audiobooks. So just treat the Saturday show as your late Saturday morning wake-up treat to listen to a kind of audiobook version of Blumenthal's Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel every Saturday. Join us at 11 a.m. Okay, that, my friends, is the dope on what happened as reported by The Nation. Jawher Jaw here, a 19-year-old man, and Adam Alabia, 17 years old, were once soccer players in the West Bank with the Palestine national team, which is accepted as such by the International Federation of Soccer Football Playing People. Now, they're never going to play sports again. I'm doing a quick rehash from the article. Both these young gentlemen were on their way home from a training session at Al Husseini Stadium on January 31st. Okay, it happened on the 31st of January. And as is often the case, it takes sometimes several weeks, if not months, for things to get sorted out when we're talking about the crimes committed by the Israeli so-called defense forces after the government and upper chain of command people do their damage control efforts and modified spin on things. It happened January 31st, and the article comes out on March the 3rd. Or maybe there must have been some other reports of the incident before, just not nearly as widespread. This article, particular one on the 3rd, was brought to my attention by a new friend that I have in my internet cavorting. A Canadian man who lives in Morocco now. He brought it to my attention and insisted that I practically begged that I read it on the show. I was made up my mind I would anyway. Very happy to do this, David. So on January 31st, Israeli forces fired upon these two men as they approached a checkpoint. Everyone has to approach a checkpoint at some point in the West Bank if they're going to go anywhere. After being shot repeatedly, they were mauled by checkpoint dogs. Yeah, as though that were really necessary after shooting the guys. And then beaten, the report says. Probably knowing full well that these guys were soccer players coming back from a training session, indicating that this was at least the second time in that day that these two guys had to go through most likely the same checkpoint because they went out to play, and they're probably recognized by the same guys who were guarding when they returned. So, yeah, they knew who they were, and then they beat them after shooting them. When you're shot in the foot, could you even try to stand up? Which means what? They were beaten while they were already on their backs or on their tummies or on their sides and mauled by checkpoint dogs. One was shot by 10 bullets in his feet. Adam took one bullet in each foot. They received the news after being sent to the hospital that soccer would no longer be a part of their futures, that they would not be playing soccer. This is only the latest instance, according to the Nation article, of the targeting of Palestinian soccer players, specifically by the IDF. Death, injury, or imprisonment has been a reality for several members of the Palestinian national team. This is not just a general statement of Palestinians generally, but specifically, the article points out imprisonment, injury, and death of soccer players, Arab soccer players, over the last 5 years. And as it says here, just imagine if members of Spain's top-flight World Cup team had been jailed, shot, or killed by another country. And imagine the international media outrage that would ensue then. Imagine if prospective youth players for Brazil were shot in the feet by the military of another nation. But, tragically, these events along the checkpoints have received little attention on the sports page or beyond. Okay. Enough from this specific article. I thank you for bearing with me and all of the goody-goody internet reader comments that followed. You know, one reason why I read those the internet comments on the articles is to add some color to what would otherwise be truly boring readings of this stuff on your radio. Since people don't seem to care to call in, although I know you're out there listening, I think it's important to add another dimension to the reading of the articles, perhaps a little levity. And so that's what that is. Now, here is, as I look into another folder here, I was just, when I opened the show, I was all over the place and apologetic and really slow and clumsy because I had just, was just in the process of getting the latest information as I could find it on this story. This from the Jerusalem Post on February 12th, almost a month ago. The Palestinian Authority to ask the International Football Federation to expel Israel. The International Federation, of course, just shortened to FIFA. PA to ask FIFA to expel Israel by Khaled Abu Toameh. February 12th. Chairman of the Palestinian Football Association says Israel should be expelled for failing to abide by FIFA conventions. Picture here of the Israeli soccer team in Russia. The Palestinian Authority will ask the Federation mentally replace the accent marks here. The PA will ask the Federación Internacional de Football Association to expel Israel from the organization for failing to abide by its conventions. Jibril Rajoub, chairman of the Palestinian Football Association, announced Wednesday. Again, this is reported on the Jerusalem Post. In the Jerusalem Post, it says here, Israel's best-selling English language and most read English website. Continuing, Rajoub, a senior Fatah official and former Palestinian Authority security commander, said that the Palestinians won't accept any compromises or half-solutions to solve the problems facing Palestinian athletes in sports. We will demand the expulsion of Israel from FIFA and the International Olympics Committee, Rajoub told reporters in Ramallah. He said that the Palestinian demand for the expulsion of Israel would be presented to FIFA during the organization's next conference in June. Rajoub also called for international recognition of the Palestinian Football Association as a national Palestinian organization. He said he would seek the backing of Arab ministers of youths during their upcoming meeting on March 14 for the demand to expel Israel from FIFA. He said that Iran, Qatar, Oman, Jordan, Algiers, and Tunisia have already pledged to back the Palestinian demand. Rajoub claimed that Israel does not want the Palestinians to have their own national sports entity and seeks to break the Palestinians' athletic will. Okay, almost all of that was a repeat from the first piece that I brought to you, or an earlier piece, but I did manage to get, and of course this is almost a month old, so much for my effort to get the latest information. I got this one other piece. Okay, this is, this is from I believe this also came to us by way of J Post. I'm very leery about reading anything from the Jerusalem Post because they have, not just in my opinion, but by my experience, a history of bending the truth and occasionally outright lying about things. Good old J Post. That's my experience with them. This one is dated July 8th, 2013. So we read this with a perspective on the events of January 31st of this year. This is July 8, 2013. FIFA president says Israel must ease travel for Palestinian players. An individual named Blatter, the president of FIFA, Blatter hopes to speak to Israeli officials to ease restrictions on Palestinian soccer players. Picture of FIFA president Sepp Blatter, S-E-P-P, in a Reuters photo. Ramallah, West Bank. West Bank. FIFA president Sepp Blatter told Palestinian sports leaders on Sunday of last July, that he would speak to Israeli officials to try to ease travel restrictions on Palestinian soccer players. The head of the sports governing body was due to meet Israel's soccer chiefs on Monday and was also hoping to speak to political leaders on the matter. Palestinians are angry that Israel's security forces, who control movement between the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, frequently prevent athletes from traveling freely between the two separated territories. I will go to defend not only the Palestine Football Association, but I will defend the basic principles of FIFA, which are to connect people and not to separate people. The principles are to recognize each other through football and to live not only in peace, but in harmony, Blatter said, Mr. Blatter said. Palestine FA head Jibril Rajoub threatened that if the matter was not resolved satisfactorily, he would call on delegates at the next FIFA Congress to expel Israel. This back last July. That if the matter was not resolved satisfactorily to the Palestinians. Continuing with the article, Israel cites security concerns but says the disease travel for athletes between Palestinian territories. The Palestinians want the West Bank and the Gaza Strip for a future state with Arab East Jerusalem as its capital. The West Bank, which is controlled by Western-only backed Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas of the secular Fatah faction, has self-rule in some areas, but Israel has overall military control of the territory. The entire territory. The Gaza Strip, from which militants have fired thousands of rockets and mortar bombs into the Jewish state in recent years, is ruled by the Islamist Hamas faction, which calls for Israel's destruction. Apparently, their charter, as it exists now, does call for the destruction of Israel, although when I looked at the English translation of the charter quite a while back, I didn't see the word destruction or destroy anywhere in it. Also, this being an article from the Jerusalem Post, pretty much mandates them to point out the rockets and mortar bombs that Israel has had to suffer in recent years. But the J Post conveniently leaves out the fact that since just about at the time of Hamas's freely elected taking of power of the Gazan government in 2006, Israel has clamped down hard on all activity going into and out of the land gates, the borders between Israel and the Gaza Strip, and of course Egypt, being a kind of ally of Israel, has done the same. Everything into and out of Egypt and or between Egypt and the Gaza Strip. There are drastic shortages of some of the most necessary things needed, including medical supplies and replacement parts for machinery that do fail in their hospitals. I was there. I've seen it. I've been to the Gaza Strip. And this was only, that was in 08, only 2 years after Hamas took over. They were already in very dire straits. They need replacement parts and repairs, and people with know-how to repair things like their water treatment facilities, their power plant facilities, which is already under great stress and often operating only for a couple of hours a day on any given day of the week. And, of course, nutrition. The children, according to United Nations evaluations, are suffering from malnutrition with a variety of manifestations of that ailment, human-caused ailment of malnutrition. The food is there. Israel is just not letting it in. To me, I for one, cannot criticize the Gazans for firing rockets. If they suddenly stop all rocket fire, does anyone out there, even the Israelis, really think that overnight or anywhere near overnight, the goods are going to flow, the children will eat, the schools will be able to function, and transportation on a near normal basis? No, my friends. That's not the history there. This is an economic siege, which is a de facto continuation of the occupation. That, by the way, is the case by definition, according to the United Nations. The Gaza Strip is still under Israeli occupation because the economic siege is a de facto occupation. It fits the bill. Let me finish with this J-Post article here. Israel allows a small number of Palestinians through the border posts that it controls around Gaza, mainly for medical treatment. And I'll add, a lot of people in serious need of medical treatment are still not permitted to get it, to go through and get it in Israel. Continuing, it also maintains a naval blockade of the Strip, but a border crossing with Egypt is largely open for travel. We hope the Israelis will not lose this chance to reconsider their behavior with the Palestinians. If they do not, we will ask next year that Israel should be expelled from FIFA, Rajoub said. He said this last July, which is in 2013. It is now next year. It is 2014. And it took an incident like the shooting of the feet of these two guys to bring this issue to the forefront again. And now, as Rajoub promised, they're asking that Israel be expelled. They can't make it happen. They can only appeal to FIFA for that. Continuing, Blatter came to the West Bank from Jordan and attended a number of ceremonial events at various locations, including opening new offices for the Palestine Football Association near Ramallah, which is the Palestinian seat of government. Blatter said that the Palestine FA... I can't think of what FA would stand for. I don't think he means PA. But again, Blatter said that the Palestine FA would bid to host the FIFA Congress in 2016. Not the games, but the Congress in 2016 or the following year. Okay, so we take that article into consideration of the events from January 31st. And I would say that that is eye-opening. Let's see why I retain this next piece here. Oh, somebody decided to put me on their email list. I get that from time to time. I decided for the time being to keep this one. The American Task Force on Palestine, ATFP. News roundup for March 5 of 2014. This is something that actually hit the mainstream news here over the last couple of days. I'll repeat it on this glorious pirate underground, non-compliant with the FCC, community radio, free radio of Santa Cruz. Broadcasting at 101.3 FM, streaming live at freakradio.org. Click on the red oval for this free streaming link. Okay. From Reuters, or by way of Reuters, this is titled, Jewish State, quote-unquote, recognition adds new Israeli-Palestinian tripwire by Crispian Balmer, Jerusalem, March 5. And a picture of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who I told you about last Saturday's Mideast Migraines episode, was in Mountain View, just over the hill here, a couple of days ago, last Wednesday, the 5th, hosted by Governor Jerry Brown. We were protesting him. You bet we were. This article is posted on the same date, March 5th. But it shows him, Netanyahu, addressing the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee in Washington. Well, that was the day before. Okay, Reuters. When peace talks between the Israelis and Palestinians resumed last July, everyone assumed that the main sticking points would remain, as ever, security, borders, the status of Jerusalem, and the plight of refugees. It looks like everyone was wrong. As the United States struggles to put together a framework deal that will allow negotiations to proceed beyond an initial April deadline, they have run into an unexpected roadblock, namely Israel's firm demand to be recognized as a specifically Jewish state and the Palestinians' adamant rejection of any such idea. Although all the old tangible issues remain unresolved, suddenly a conceptual one has become a major stumbling point, and one drenched in history and mutual recrimination. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said repeatedly during a visit to the United States this week that to secure peace, He needs Palestinian recognition, arguing that the issue goes to the heart of the generations-old conflict. Quote, just as Israel is prepared to recognize a Palestinian state, the Palestinians must be prepared to recognize a Jewish state, Netanyahu said on Tuesday. And yes, you bet I'll have comments of this article following the article. In recognizing the Jewish state, you would finally make clear that you are truly prepared to end the conflict. So recognize the Jewish state. No excuses, no delays. It is time, he, Netanyahu, told the pro-Israel AIPAC lobby. The United States has endorsed the Israeli position, but the Palestinians say that to concede on this point would be to jeopardize the rights of Israel's sizable Arab minority. Quote, this is like telling the Palestinians they did not exist all these hundreds and thousands of years, that this historically has been a Jewish land, end quote, said Hanan Ashrawi, a senior member of the Palestine Liberation Organization, or the PLO. Palestine historically has been diverse. There have been many tribes here. Our history is not going to be something we can deny, she told reporters at a recent news briefing. The Palestine National Charter of 1964 defines Palestinians as, quote, the Palestinian Arab people. Blame game. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says the PLO made its great concession in 1993 when it acknowledged Israel's right to exist and agreed that their own state should be built on territory seized by Israel in the 1967 war. Land that makes up just 22%, less than a quarter, I'll add, of British Mandate Palestine. He and his aides argue that neither Egypt nor Jordan, the only two Arab states to have signed peace deals with Israel, were ever required to make a similar gesture. I'm not sure of the significance of that. In addition, they accuse the hardline Netanyahu of deliberately throwing an insurmountable hurdle across their path in an effort not to be blamed should the talks fail. Quote, Netanyahu's request for our recognition of a Jewish state is just a waste of time and meant to evade a true and just peace. End quote, said Abbas spokesman Nabil Abu Erdene, responding to the Israeli leader's AIPAC speech. And again, AIPAC stands for American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. That is the single big Israeli lobbying force in Washington, D.C. My words there. Continuing. The issue was first raised as an Israeli concern by Netanyahu's predecessor, Ehud Olmert, who is considered a political moderate and arguably came as close or closer than any other Israeli leader to making peace with the Palestinians. Many in the Israeli political establishment support Netanyahu's stance, saying Palestinian recognition would show the world that they had accepted that Jews had a right to the land, rather than merely acknowledged a place called Israel. The debate is being played out against genuine anxiety in Israel that demographics point to a steady decline in the Jewish majority within the country. According to the Central Bureau of Statistics, Jews made up 75.3% of Israel's population in 2013, against 77.8% in 2000, 81.8% in 1990, and 83.7% in 1980, which says that Israel's Jewish portion of the population is steadily, over the past three or four decades, declined. Continuing, over that same period, Israel's mainly Muslim Arab population increased from 12.7% to 20.7%. That's quite a jump. Palestinian recognition of Israel as the Jewish state will make it hard to promote ideas of turning the state of Israel into a state for all of all its citizens, said Giora Ilan, a former Israeli national security advisor. This is an Israeli talking now. Former national security advisor. Palestinian recognition of Israel as the Jewish state will make it hard to promote ideas of turning the state of Israel into a state of all its citizens. Continuing, Palestinians argue that this notion threatens the future of Israel's minorities, even though Israel's 1948 Declaration of Independence guarantees full civil rights for all its citizens. It will become perfectly acceptable to discriminate against non-Jews because this will be a Jewish state, says the PLO's Hanan Ashrawi. Next section, refugee, quote, fantasy. Refugee fantasy. Israelis say the Jewish nature of their state was enshrined in the international arena from the word go when the 1947 UN resolution that recommended the partition of British Mandate Palestine mentioned the term Jewish state 30 times. Palestinians respond that the term is used because at that stage there was no other way to differentiate between the proposed Jewish and Arab entities. In other words, Israel, as such, did not exist. The main practical result of any recognition of Israel's Jewish nature would be to signal that the Palestinians were foregoing the right of return to Israel of Palestinian refugees who fled or were forced from their homes in Arab-Israeli wars. The United Nations puts the number of registered refugees and their descendants at 4.98 million, just under 5 million, which is well over Israel's, well over half Israel's current population of some 8.1 million people. Well over half. President Abbas, you would be telling Palestinians to abandon their fantasy of flooding Israel with refugees, Netanyahu said in his Tuesday speech. In a speech last month, Abbas echoed Netanyahu, saying, "We do not seek either to flood Israel with millions of refugees or to change its social composition." However, he and his advisors believe acknowledgement of the Jewish nature of Israel would close the door on any of the refugees returning. Do you think any Palestinian leader in his right mind can ever accept that? This makes it impossible to sign any peace deal with Israel. Do you see the horror of this narrative? Said veteran Palestinian negotiator Nabil Shath. Not everyone in Israel agrees with Netanyahu over this issue. Israeli President Shimon Peres has questioned the wisdom of the demand, and Finance Minister Yair Lapid, the leader of the second largest coalition party, has also challenged it. But having made such an issue out of it, neither Netanyahu nor Abbas show any signs of backing down, raising the prospect that a new element will join the stack of hurdles that have already brought down an array of previous peace initiatives. Better read that last paragraph once more. It's kind of weird. But failing to come up with any other more concrete thing to say about it is kind of weird. Quote, quoting the article, final paragraph, but having made such an issue out of it, neither Netanyahu nor Abbas show any signs of backing down, raising the prospect that a new element will join the stack of hurdles that have already brought down an array of previous peace initiatives. In other words, with both sides sticking to their guns, their philosophical and publicly stated guns, in the form of words, of course, at that level, this is going to just end up as another hurdle, another... actually, excuse for Israel to continue with expanding Jewish settlements in territory that does not belong to them legally, maybe by Israeli law, but certainly by decent internationally sanctioned and recognized law. It's not Israel's land. Okay, here now I will make my comments as though I hadn't already been making them all along. This Reuters piece starts by talking about the assumption that security, namely Israel's security, borders between the Jewish side and the Arab side. The status of Jerusalem and the plight of the refugees would have been at the top of peace talks that resumed last July, that they'd be the main sticking points. But alas, we have this problem with Abbas's demand stated in this speech to AIPAC about a week ago that nothing will go forward in terms of a Palestinian state as long as the Palestinians refuse to recognize that their oppressors, the people who stole their land in the 20th century, stole, by many measures and on many accounts, stole the land out from under the Palestinian Arabs, that the Palestinians recognize that their oppressors have a specifically, and at least in the long run, ultimately, completely a Jewish state. You can tell, given all those facts that I stated and the other things that were stated in the article, this is a nail in the coffin to a real peace deal. For all, you know, as far as Netanyahu is concerned, and he's demonstrated this over and over and over countless times, anything he says, even hinting at endorsement of a future independent and sovereign Palestinian state, are nothing but words, pure PR, so he can sound good, so he can get into the United States and talk to groups like AIPAC. He has to say it. To be accepted, to be socially kosher. To be able to begin to talk to people about peace. He has to go, it's lip service, he goes through the verbal motions and says, yes, Palestinian state, but. These preconditions exist. And really all the preconditions that Netanyahu states, he knows full well, stick in the throat of the Palestinians. Not because the Palestinians are a bunch of unreasonable savages who supposedly want to kill all the Jews, but because nobody else in the world who wants and deserves an independent state would have to put up with them. Netanyahu and his Likud party, which, by the way, is in a ruling coalition with the Israel Beitenu party, which was stated toward the end of this article, its leader having objections to his coalition party's other party leader. Even the party that they're in a governing coalition with, they have disagreements about this particular sticking point that Netanyahu is sticking with. What was I saying? Well, let's hear. Okay, I think you got the gist of what I'm talking about. By the way, it's 4:38 Pacific Daylight Time in Santa Cruz County, California. This is the Mideast Migraine Show with your host, Ren, coming to you by way of Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live on freakradio.org. Click on the red oval. Tell your friends to click on the red oval if you want to hear it on the internet. Otherwise, we are locally transmitting on the FM frequency 101.3 FM. No phone calls. Anyone care to discuss any of this? According to my lights and my board, everything should be working normally with the phone line. Area code 831-427-3772. That's 831-427-3772. That's line one. Shut up, Ren. You can also send me a message at MideastMadness@gmx.com. MideastMadness@gmx.com. See, Netanyahu knows that until he's really using this argument about the PALs recognizing the Jewish state as such. He knows that they're not going to accept it. So, anticipating that, he knows he will never even have to begin to talk about the other issues, namely security, borders, the status of Jerusalem, including East Jerusalem, and the plight of refugees. He knows he won't even have to begin to talk about that stuff. So he's throwing up a deliberate brick wall is what he's doing, which prevents anyone from beginning to talk about the other issues. And that's his strategy. He's trying to make the Palestinians look like they're the ones who are being unreasonable, even though they are the ones who, for the last 66 years, and even before that act, longer than that actually, have consistently lost land, lost power, lost a voice in what's going on in their own ancestral natural homeland. It is the Palestinian Arabs who have been doing nothing but lose. If it's a question of their land being transferred over to Jews who recently moved to Palestine, or if we're talking about Palestinian soccer players getting shot in the feet, it's the Arabs who have been losing out all along. And they're still the butt of terrible, racist, thoroughly racist criticism by, I didn't read you some of the truly ugly letters that obvious, well, Zionists, whether they're in Israel or America or anywhere else, letters that people have been, comments that people have put in response to the articles that I've read to you. The really ugly, stupid ones. No time for that right now. I think I really appreciate the words of Hanan Ashrawi, who I myself have seen twice, heard her speak on two occasions back in Minnesota, long before she became a Palestinian government, high government celebrity. Back in the 70s, I heard her speak in a small room in the student union, Kauffman Union, there on the main campus at the University of Minnesota. Back before she got so much notoriety, it was a small, rather cozy environment where we got to hear her speak. And then, of course, a couple of decades later, she spoke at a church there on Nicollet and 19th, Plymouth Church, Minneapolis, to an utterly packed house. I was literally the last person to get in and take a seat. I think I managed to get a seat. After that, they wouldn't let people in no more. Standing room only, where they could not allow standers because it was against the fire code. Hanan Ashrawi speaking at that event. And I wrote on one of the 3x5 cards that they let people write their questions on. I handed it in, and she chose to answer the question. I wrote down, essentially, isn't it time that Hanan Ashrawi runs for the position of president of the Palestinian Authority? Before she had a chance to answer, there was huge applause from the audience, and I think some people even stood up. By the way, her answer was largely in the negative, explaining that she didn't think it was time for new leaders, or that new leaders as such, as individuals, would not, as a kind of a gimmicky thing, change the course of events for the better in Israel and Palestine. But new leadership or a new direction was what we really needed. So that's basically what she said to that. But I really appreciate the statements that she's made. Here, I'll read them again. The United States has endorsed the Israeli position, but the Palestinians say that to concede to this point would be to jeopardize the rights of Israel's sizable Arab minority. Roughly 1 in 5 Israelis are Arabs. That's 20%, who are referred to officially and popularly as, quote-unquote, Israeli Arabs, even though they are actually Palestinian Arabs with Israeli citizenship. And no, it is not true that they have all the rights, all the same rights as their Jewish Israeli counterparts. This is being spelled out specifically by Adalah, which is the Palestinian Legal Rights Center in Israel. They have well over 50 by now, maybe a lot more than 50 instances that are documented of Jews receiving, on the books, on the legal books, legally receiving preferential treatment in certain matters. You're talking about property rights, intermarriage, access to water, recognition for this or that. It's being this supposed parity between Arab and Jew is being betrayed left and right, and these are, depending on how you look at it, a good thing or a disreputable thing. that these matters are being taken up more and more by the Israeli judicial system. More and more challenges to these new discriminatory laws are being brought to court by the Arabs. And apparently most of the time, little or no practical wins are coming to the side of the Arabs who are bringing the lawsuits. Okay, Hanan Ashrawi's quote, this is like telling the Palestinians they did not exist all these hundreds and thousands of years in Palestine, that this historically has been a Jewish land, supposedly been a strictly Jewish land, even though the Jews up until about 100 years ago comprised a very tiny minority in Palestine as a whole and a slightly larger majority in Jerusalem. But a minority, nonetheless, said Hanan Ashrawi, senior member of the PLO. She also said, as I read earlier, Palestine historically has been diverse in terms of the ethnicities and the religions and the persuasions. In Palestine, historically diverse, there have been many tribes here. Our history is not going to be something we can deny. And she told reporters at a recent news briefing. That's a fascinating thing about Palestine under whether they're being controlled by the British or before them the Turkish Ottoman Empire or before them the Mamluks, the Persians, the Romans, at least going about back to sometime after the Roman control, if not even during then, there was a great diversity of ethnicities and religions, or there came to be over the centuries. And about 100, 125, 150 years ago, even under Turkey, under the control of the Turkish Empire, before that was overturned by the end of the First World War, there were so many other ethnicities who lived and communized and shared an economy, had something of a working economy in Jerusalem, in Haifa, Beersheba, or any previous name that place may have had, throughout Palestine, as was probably the case in what are now the contemporary countries of Jordan, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria. And maybe you can say that they were forced into getting along with one another through the iron-fisted control of outside parties, be they the Turks or the Europeans, either Britain or France, who shared the joy of colonial domination of that part of Arabia with Great Britain, France and Great Britain. Some people will just say, well, if it weren't for if it weren't for the benevolent control of the European and Turkish providers who had the power and control of empire, then there would have been all kinds of civil wars and people slaughtering each other. Folks, whether or not there's any truth to that, if these people were slaughtering each other on a consistent basis for over 2,000 years, there wouldn't be any people left there anymore. So, it's almost close to closing time for the show. I want to finish this up. Yeah, I appreciate Ashrawi's comments. She's still there and plugging away. She is a Christian Palestinian, by the way. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says the PLO made its great concession in 93 when it acknowledged Israel's right to exist and agreed that their own state should be built on territory seized by Israel in its June 1967 war, which Israel started, historic fact, it's all documented, land that makes up just 22% of British Mandate Palestine, which is far less than the 44% that they would have had with an Arab state area as determined by the United Nations over their heads. Nobody really seriously asked the Arabs if they wanted to partition Palestine. By and large, they didn't, but the UN ignored them and made this happen anyway. And then Israel, which was given just over half of the land, an extra 6%, according to this division, expanded that to 78% in the war that followed. Everyone harps about how the five Arab nations descended upon Israel the day after it declared independence. But they don't talk about, and perhaps don't know, is that there was about 6 months worth of a civil war going on there in Palestine, with Israelis successfully taking control, seizing, and in the process committing a number of massacres of unarmed civilians, mostly unarmed Arab civilians, taking control of first the Arab villages that still remained in the Jewish state area, and then expanding outward into what was supposed to be the Arab state area, liberating, quote unquote, liberating the Jews who lived in those areas and killing Arabs there too, and expanding their state to 78% of historic Palestine, British Mandate Palestine. Okay. I think we've beaten this one to death here. I've made my point. And that's what Netanyahu is up to, not to mention garnering more technological secrets and know-how from California Silicon Valley when he visited 2 days ago, or rather last week, in Mountain View. That's what that whole visit was about. And it's 4:52 in the afternoon. As I've said before a number of times, so much to read, so little time, so much material to get to, and it's all out there if people do genuinely independent searches from a variety of reporters. Don't just go to your favorite Zionist pro-Israeli website to find out what's going on. You already know what they're going to say. And if you don't care for Israel, I mean, just assume them blown off the map, which is that in itself. Blowing Israel off the map is a much-touted quotation which has been entirely overplayed by Israel's defenders. It was Iran's former president was accused of saying that years ago, and he didn't even actually say that. It's true. He didn't actually say that in so many words. But if people who know how to manipulate the press and the media, when they get a hold of a phrase like that and know how to make it go viral, it suddenly becomes reality when it wasn't reality to begin with. Please don't forget that all my recorded programs are available at an alternate location archive, namely the Mideast Migraines and formerly named Mideast Madness archives, it's one archive really, on radioforall.net. It's radio and then the number 4, ALL.NET, radioforall.net, so you can catch up with all the facts and all my infallible opinions, as it were, at radioforall.net. And please, folks, when you research this stuff on your own, go try to get a variety of opinions from both sides of the spectrum of the narrative. Try to find neutral sources who are in the know and not just plagued with opinions that have been polluted by one side or the other over the years and decades. No phone calls today, but I know you've been listening. I appreciate it. I hope to have you back here next Monday at 3 p.m. And, of course, bright and early at 11 a.m. on Saturday for the Saturday edition of Mideast Migraines for the reading of Max Blumenthal's book Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. Contact me, send an email to MideastMadness@gmx.com. That's Mideast Madness, the old show's name. MideastMadness@gmx.com. Thank you for listening. And here's a little music as I phase into the next thing on the schedule here. Ta ta.
To a place where the Spirit would find us, and in joy and surrender would bind us. We are one anyway. Anyway, we are more than we seem. There are those who will lead us, protect us each step of the way.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Monday, March 10th, 2014.